This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I am Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. Most of us love taking a holiday, the chance to explore someplace new, try some food. But how did you go? Was it a free and easy holiday where you organised everything yourself without using a travel agent? Or did you go on a package tour? To tell us about these changing travel trends and if organised tours are indeed a dying industry, we have with us Danny Yap, CEO of Paolo Tours, who will also share their strategy for growth in these very challenging times. Welcome, Danny. Now, Paolo Tours has been around for more than 30 years, so you took over the company from your father, and now you and your brother Derek run the company. So tell us, how different is Paolo Tours today?
We are predominantly still very much the same company my dad built, but we are evolving since last year. So what we have done is, besides the group tours, we have also been doing a lot of the corporate travels, and now we're evolving more towards digitals.
From the annual report, the main revenue comes from leisure travel. And the split between outbound and inbound is quite marked, right? Because the bulk of it is still outbound.
Yes.
Now, why is inbound so much less?
It's a high risk. Number one, because we give the partner that we work with credit terms. So that's something that I'm not very keen on. Number two, we don't control the customer base. We're only helping that agent that we work with. If today he switches partner, my business automatically just disappears overnight. So that's where we looked at it and decided, okay, look, we shouldn't be focusing on this sector so much. We should focus more on outbound because we control the clients. The clients are with us. We have the client database, so we dictate the pace, not being dictated by someone else. So hence, you see the difference. Of course, when I was there, there have been a lot of good trade partners that we've built up with. So we have still maintained those relationships with them because they've been good to us. They've been giving us clients a year on year. And because of those steady relations that we have, we still maintain them. And hence, that's why you still see the revenue from inbound side.
Now, we look at this from a broader perspective. Next year is Visit Malaysia Year 2020. And we also had some initiatives announced at the recent budget to boost tourism. But why do you think that Malaysia isn't doing as well as Thailand, for example, in getting the tourist numbers? Do you think Tourism Malaysia is doing enough? Is our ministry doing enough?
That is a very good question. Well, because I'm not too much involved in inbound anymore.
Your observation as a tourism player, as one of the larger tour companies, listed tour companies.
Well, the thing is, I think it's about what we can offer as a whole. If you compare Malaysia, the thing is, when people look at Southeast Asia, when tourists look at Southeast Asia per se, they don't look at Malaysia itself. They also look at Indonesia, Thailand, Singapore, and there will always be something for them in those countries as well. If you ask me, I think Malaysia, we have our advantages over them, but are we presenting it the right way? Are we going towards those markets the way it should be? Are we engaging with the tour companies, the travel agencies in those countries the effectively? Are we engaging with them directly? I mean, if Tourism Malaysia works with, I'm not sure how Tourism Malaysia works because I don't really deal with them on this aspect of the business. But when I look at what I do with the tourism boards of other countries, tourism boards from other countries actually come and approach us and ask us, what can we do for Japan, for example? They'll work hand in hand with us. So we'll work together in a program and what we can do to enhance the sale of Japan packages. So I'm not sure if Tourism Malaysia does that besides the awareness program. So, I mean, you can spend as much as you want on advertising, but at the end of the day, it still comes down to the groundwork that you do as well, the engagements that you do with the stakeholders around those countries. I mean, if today you're just advertising,
it's not enough.
You're the same as any other tourism, other countries in that sense, right?
Okay, let's go back to outbound tours, which is the main revenue earner for Paolo. Now, tell us, how is that organised and what are you doing differently?
We are still very much the same. Whereby we work with a foreign operator. So we work with a local partner over there. So when we deal with them, they will handle the transportations, the accommodations, the sightseeing. They will handle that part for us. We just supply them the clients in that sense. However, what we feel is, moving down the road, maybe 3 to 5 years from now, there will come a time where we need to relook into this. There are already multiple times where we looked at direct contracting with the hotels ourselves because we feel that why depend on them when you can actually handle the whole thing yourself?
Would it be more profitable then?
Definitely, definitely.
Well, you cut out the middleman.
You cut out the middleman. I mean, the client's ours at the end of the day, right? So if you can control the whole supply chain, why not? But then you always look at the company that you're in and then do you have the resources to do that? Whether it's something that we're comfortable doing that or not, you know? And there is also a risk in that sense. I mean, take it for example, if we did this with Turkey, if you asked me this question 5 years ago, 6, 7 years ago, I would say, yeah, let's do it. Then the unexpected happens. The terrorist attack happened. All these things happen, right? The unfortunate things happen. If you were having an office there and all this happened, it will really, really have an impact on your P&L straight away because suddenly you're talking about there's no tourists wanting to go there anymore, right? So there are these kind of risks that you have to look into before you actually make a decision on that.
And if we look at some of the markets or some of the outbound tours that you go in, I know you travel. You have destinations across Asia, Europe, and America, and you specialize in Japan also. But what are the new countries that you're looking at? And does it matter? Because is there a margin difference?
Well, the margin at the end they varies for us because.
Or is your business driven by the customer? Because at this current juncture, these tours are popular.
Yeah, it depends on. There's multiple factors actually. Number one is, you might load up on a lot of inventories for a particular destination and for some reason that year. So then you might have a look at, oh, probably we made a wrong bet on that, right? But if you do make a right bet on this and you really load up on the inventories, then that's where you reap maximum benefits of it. The profit returns do the best, right?
So how do you spot these trends then?
I can tell you it's not easy to spot at all. I think in our years, we've probably got it 4 or 5 times right where we really got the full maximum potential of it.
So do you know your market share in Malaysia for the, let's say, the 5 hour and above kind of travel?
For group packages?
Yeah, for group packages.
I think we made an estimation ourselves and I think we're about 20%.
Who are the others? Who are the 80%? Are you number one in the market?
No, I wouldn't dare to claim that I'm number one.
So who's number one? Is it Apple Tours?
I don't know, honestly.
Because there's no data available.
No, there's no data available. And because the thing is, the travel industry is really, really, really diverse.
And fragmented.
Yeah, fragmented as well. I mean, if you look at it from a travel perspective, there's leisure travel and there's corporate travel. So if you break it down further, we're just a small subset of all this.
What is your competitive edge versus them? Or the other players in Malaysia? I mean, for example, okay, Apple Tours, I went to their website and I noticed they like to use celebrities to guide their tours. So what is your differentiating factor? Is it price? You are cheaper? Why should someone go on a Palo Tours versus an Apple Tour for the same destination?
Well, we don't believe in the celebrity tour. The cost of the celebrity at the end,
it's not worth it.
Yeah. We are trying to be more of a aggregator.
But as a customer, what do I get for going on a Palo tour? Let's say a GTT or an Apple tour. Cheaper? Better service?
You get value for money.
So that's your proposition?
Yeah, we'll give you value for money. At the end of the day, you don't overpay, we'll give you value for money. At the end of the day, when you go on a group tour, it's all about value for money. And then the air tickets we get a cheaper price, although there's certain conditions to it because of the travel dates are fixed and all this, but then at the end of the day, it's still cheaper. The volume that we produce allows us to have economies of scale with the hoteliers and all this, right? So at the end of the day, yes, value for money again. So if you compare yourself when you purchase with the online companies, yeah, you might say that, oh, online, I'm getting this price. Add together, it's about this price. Yeah, but you have not got the final bill, right? When you go on a tour with us, you have the final bill with us, more or less. You know, we have packaged in the meals, we have packaged everything in. You can practically say you can go with an empty wallet if you want, and you'll still be able to come back.
I did go into your Facebook page, and honestly, there were quite a bit of complaints, especially for the Turkey tours. I think issues like poor quality of food and a lot of complaints about the hot air balloon, I think, which is the highlight. So what's the situation there? Because nowadays, you can't ignore social media, right?
Yeah. Well, we can't ignore social media for sure. And the fact that we leave it on the Facebook means we also don't want to hide from all this. So we don't hide it. I'm not sure if it's a good or bad thing. We leave it there. And we also appreciate all these feedback coming back to us. And because that's where we take these as opportunity to discuss with our partner over there on the issues that arose and then how we aim to eliminate all this from happening again.
Do you practice this thing called force shopping? When I was much younger, I have been on package tours. And the part that I dislike the most is when you get ushered into shops to buy things. And time is wasted there rather than actually seeing the sights. Mm-hmm. Is this something you practice at Palo Tours?
It's something that we try not to practice. If I have a choice, I would not do it at all. But then at the end of the day, when consumers come to you, when they compare, it's all about dollars and cents first. So we also make it known to them that for this itinerary, there will be some stops. The reason because when, for example, go Korea. If I don't do this, no one in Korea wants to do my business. Because to them is I might as well work with the other travel agency who will say, oh, yes, to this. And then there's a possibility for them to make more.
So it's the local agent that actually derives a commission from these shopping, not you.
Not us. They would say, oh, we'll give you a cut. But then to us, it's like, what's the point? I already don't do it. You know, but if they don't do it, then you see the cost getting higher because they subsidize the package. If it's not forced upon us because of local landscape, we would not be doing it. We are stuck in the situation that if we don't, we end up with very high costs. And when customers look at the cost, they'll be looking, oh, yours is more expensive. But when you say force, in Korea and Turkey, it's not like China. I should be honest with you first. They do stop at those places, but they don't make you purchase. It's still up to you. They just make sure that they just want to be given a fair chance as well. They just bring you there, show you the shop. If you want it, you buy. If not, you just walk out.
So if customers don't want this for shopping, they actually have to pay more in a way.
Yeah, because you're paying the face value of the whole trip, isn't it?
You're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Danny Yap, CEO of Palo Berhad. After we come back, we will discuss the impact of disruptors in the travel industry and can old school companies like them adjust to stay relevant and profitable? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Danny Yap, CEO of Palo Berhad. Earlier, we were discussing in detail the main segments of the company while addressing some of the complaints leveled at its tours and if there's any truth to force shopping. And Danny, the way people travel has changed tremendously in the last 10 years. Some of this is due to disruptors like Agoda, Klook, and even Google Flights. But you can also book tour packages online now. So how are you responding?
We are making the changes to target these kind of customers. Like you said, they're doing online. But we have realized is even though they do online, they purchase their travel package, their tours online, they will still refer to someone for advice. They'll still ask someone, oh, have you been to this place? To get an idea of how long they should be staying, where they should go. So we've got people asking us this. And true enough, yes, they ask us, we give them a quote. The process now is where we're trying to enhance ourselves. Because right now we're working with people that take somewhat longer to reply to us as well. So we have circumstances where customers will go online because they just can't wait. Or to them it's like, oh, I just want to get it done in 24 hours. I just want to get it done out of my way, book the tours and know that, oh, I'm going there. Some will come wait for us and then we'll handle them. So there's still customers would look online to compare and then come back to us and say, okay, look, I'll book with you guys because you guys are cheaper at the end of the day, right?
But what about for those customers where they organize everything themselves? They don't even need you anymore then.
They don't need us, but then they'll still roam the websites to get the infos and all this, right? So that's where we have made a difference to what we are doing now. We're trying not to be the same old brick and mortar company. We bought over this company called Travel Ideas Online for 700,000, I think.
Ringgit. It's not a related party transaction.
It's not. Totally independent company. IT boys. One of the first rollout we did with them was travideas.com, which is more social media driven, where we encourage people to put up their travel journey with us.
I know, I went into your website. It's like a collection of bloggers, right?
Yeah.
Or blog entries.
Yeah.
Okay, Danny, fine that you have these new initiatives. But the question is, how do you monetize this? How does this then translate into revenue?
So this is where the next release of what we're doing will make a difference. So then you see, or slowly all of this will start to make sense. So we had Travedius, then we released T-Broker Marketplace, and the next will be the white label. So when we do white labeling, that's where we are also working with influencers, whoever that we can collaborate with. We're looking at people who have got an audience of their own. They work with us on the types of packages or types of products they believe, or the itinerary that they believe that this is how it should be done.
But how do you make the money then?
So we work with them. We work with them on sites that we do white labeling with them. We let them speak to their audience.
Okay, so they sell the country for you.
Yes.
But then you need to make money in one way or another, right?
So it's all about revenue sharing with them as well.
But how is the revenue sharing? So it's assumed that these readers of these travel ideas will somehow buy the ticket from you, book the hotel from you?
Travel ideas, Travedius is just one of the many platforms.
Okay.
We can also do white labeling with an influencer per se.
But it must drive traffic to Palo Tours at the end of the day, right?
At the end of the day, all these websites they're looking at, the tech is all by us. The products are all from us. So they're actually buying from us. So that's how we generate more revenue for ourselves. But the only difference is instead of us spending the money ourselves on advertising, all these things, we work with influencers, people with their own captive market audience, their own captive audience, and we go direct to them. They will speak their lingo. They would listen to them. They would understand and hence be able to look at this is how we should do it.
When do you expect to roll this all out? Because I actually went into your Palo website also. And it says under maintenance.
Yeah, because we're rolling out for ourselves as well. So the whole thing starts from marketplace. With the marketplace coming in, everything is white labelable. And I'm not sure the word for it. We're able to white label everything out from there. You can call marketplace the key of all inventories, the data bank of all inventories. We're also working with tech disruptors, the cloaks, the hotel providers, all this. We're working with them as well. So today you say, no, I don't believe in tour packages, all this. Fine. Then do you want to have a trip planning model there? Do you want to offer them, okay, this is the route that you should be taking, and then these are the hotels, or they can plan the hotels, they can choose the hotels, but you prefix for them a travel journey that you believe yourself.
So when can I see this new website? When will it be rolled out?
Oh, we're looking at rolling out all this by end of this year.
Okay, let's look back at the financials because you're listed on the ACE market. And last financial year was a tough one for you. You lost 12 million ringgit on the back of a revenue of 172 million. Now, the bulk of it is impairment of about 10.4 million from the reverse takeover. Mm. This also means if we strip out the impairment, it shows that the core business of tours is still losing money. So why is that the case?
The group as a whole, I would say it's losing money. It's also because we're incubating all these things. So when us being able to commercialize T-Broker, the other things that we're going to roll out, then hence we'll see a different P&L perspective coming out already. I have to remind you that the 10 million that we wrote off, it's a paper loss. It doesn't impact us per se. There's no money going out. The tours business, Palo Tours itself, is still profitable, although it could be better than what it was. Last year, you might say the economy was not doing too well, trickling over to this year. But we've made changes ourselves internally to handle this problem. So we feel that this year we should be okay already.
In your annual report, it says that the margins also compress because you shifted from group inclusive tours to affordable group tours, right? Is this a form of cannibalization of your own numbers then?
So this is a thing that we did last year where we introduced a new brand called AGT. Mm. So so Palo brand is supposed to be the more deluxe version. AGT is supposed to be the more budget-friendly version in that sense. We made some errors ourselves. I'll put my hands up that, yeah, we didn't see this. But what we have learned is from last year, the key learnings that we had is, yes, certain countries, you can have two brands operating. Certain countries, you just can't. Mm. So one brand has a sacrifice. So then we have to look at which brand is it. So that's what we've been doing. We've been aligning our routes or our itineraries according to the brand that we feel that will be able to serve that market better.
So is the worst over?
Definitely.
Is 2020 going to be a much better year?
Definitely.
So, you know, one thing I have to ask is that you listed in January 2018 at 10 cents, but the share price is now below listing price. So do you regret listing?
It's definitely worth going for it, you know.
And what was the motivation?
Well, it allows me to do more. You know, being a family-run business is totally different when you're more corporate-run now. You see things differently. You do things differently. You're more geared. So in that sense, what we're looking at is, as we move, maybe you should ask me this question 2 years down the road when everything that I want to do is actually out there. Right now, we've been trying to roll out as fast as we could, you know, but being me, I do tend to look at things and then say, okay, look, we might have to change this again, and then we'll go back to drawing board for a while, then push out again. So that's one of the things that the tech boys have been very, very patient with me. I've been known to roll back certain things and then go out again. Yeah,
because I struggle a little bit to understand what the difference would be if you were private and publicly listed.
Mm-hmm.
Could you not still roll out all these initiatives if you were not listed? Unless you're saying you want to come to the capital markets to raise money.
You could go to capital markets, eh? Yeah, but
yeah,
for us,
as a listed company, it's easier now.
Is that the only
advantage, or is it the visibility thing?
The visibility, the security you give people that you're list co now, that makes a big difference. I mean, if you look now, there's so many news on fraud cases and all this. So we give customers that kind of a security that, like, at the end they look, we're listed, you don't have to worry about it. You know, there's websites.
Not to say that listed companies don't go bust either. And for your investors, what is the reason to hold on to their shares? Because you don't also have a dividend policy. So is it about capital appreciation for your group?
No, we don't have a dividend policy at the moment, but it doesn't mean that we might not have in the future, right? I don't think it's smart to put a dividend policy when you're not very sure on how it's going to be. The ones that we're rolling out, basically, we see that our earnings could easily double or triple up in the future once it matures up. But you have to give us time. You know. But if you believe in what we're doing, believe in what I want to do, then I suppose now is a good time to go in.
And maybe, is it your plans to move from ACE to Main Market where there's even better visibility? But you need a profit for that?
Yeah, there is a profit for that. Mm-hmm. So as we become more of a digital player ourselves, that's where you see the potential of us maybe moving towards the Main Market in the future, or maybe even look at other options outside.
On that note, thank you for your time, Danny. I'm Wong Xiaoning for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, Frost & Sullivan's Malaysia Mobile Service Provider of the Year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.